to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss an article from the July issue of the Beef Watch newsletter titled Creep Feeding Beef Calves, Profit or Expense. To have a conversation about this, I'm joined today by the co-authors, Dr. Jessica Sperber, who's a Nebraska Extension Feedlot Specialist, as well as Dr. Rick Rasby, who's a Nebraska Extension Cow-Calf Specialist. Thanks for joining me today.
Good to be on.
Thanks for having us.
Before we dive into some of the nuts and bolts of creep feeding calves, give us a little background on why you might creep feed calves and what's some key things to think about before you enter into doing that.
You know, Aaron, I think, the definition of creep feeding in the beef sector is to provide some supplemental feed to calves while they're still nursing their mothers. So basically, it's to supply additional protein and energy to the calf while he's still on the cow. And I think the idea is that, when the calf, gets to be 3 to 4 months of old age and, their rumen is a little bit different than it was earlier in life, they can handle some of those feeds extremely well. But I think the idea is that how can we provide nutrients for that calf while still on the cow? And there are some situations that you want to think about that is, typically I'll tell you just right up front that I've not been a big proponent of creep feeding in the past because some of the things just haven't aligned with one another. And I think this year there's sure enough alignment in regards to the value of the gain that you add on while creep feeding, and also the low price of feed. And so those two things have lined up with the idea that there is some opportunity, I think, to put weight on that's valuable and can be valued in the end. So that's basically creep feeding. But, there's some things that you need to think about, especially when you think about what that creep feed should look like. And I think Jessica is going to talk about that in regards to nutrient content. But the idea is that there's sure enough some opportunity, I think, to think about creep feeding calves on cows this summer.
So let's talk a little more about just that relationship you mentioned, because I think to me, this is the linchpin as we think about creep feeding calves. It's really value of gain versus cost of gain. So walk through that a little bit and what we need to pay attention to with that before we dive into this project.
Yeah, so I think always the most critical thing is looking at the cost of the feed price in comparison to the cost of the calf price. And as we all know, we're going into a fall with the highest calf prices that we've ever seen. We've been in this same trend for the last 2 years. And so with these incredibly high calf prices and pretty moderate to low cost of corn and other commodity products, feed products at this time, really, when you put the pencil to it, to the paper, creep feeding does pencil in more times than not right now because of the high calf price paired with the low feed price. We were in a time of pretty brutal drought over the last 2 years, but we're seemingly coming out of that in a lot of places in Nebraska and other geographic regions of the U.S. And so, especially in a time when we see drought, there is an advantage to creep feed, especially trying to offer those calves more nutrient value and nutrient density in a time when maybe they're lacking in terms of forage quality or forage quantity. And so there's a whole bunch of different things economically to consider when we talk about if creep feeding pays or it doesn't. And that's something that Dr. Rasby and I really, while we were putting together this beef watch, we wanted to make sure that we really dove into the economic differences in when creep feeding pays and when it doesn't.
In the article, you go through an example and actually just put some pencil to paper, as you said, and look at, if we're thinking about what's the value of the calf at 500 pounds versus 565, what's the cost of the feed? What's the value of the gain? There's some relationships that have to be considered. And I guess, Jessica, go just a little further, because this is, again, I think really important. There is a price slide, meaning as cattle get heavier, they tend to bring less per pound. So we sometimes, or I sometimes see folks in the industry say, well, if you add an additional pound, it's worth $3.70 a pound if that's what your calves are worth. But that's not exactly true, is it?
Not always true, no. And I think what that form of gain is, whether that's muscle on the animal or extra flesh. So if that animal is just growing frame and lean tissue muscle mass versus adding on a lot of additional fat and sometimes marked as fleshy in the industry, I think this is where we really see that price slide start to take a negative effect. And so, yeah, like you mentioned, Aaron, with creep feeding, improve that gain of those calves, maybe 60 pounds for creep feeding for the period of time at the end of, prior to weaning, so on, maybe 2 to 4 months prior to weaning, however long you're leaving the creep out there for. Obviously, have to consider how much additional value those extra 60 pounds are worth or 65 pounds are worth. But in years outside of right now, we really had to focus on the price slide. We're not really seeing the price slide as aggressive as we did in years previous on heavier calves, being quite discounted and compared to those lighter calves, or essentially yards trying to buy the gain. In this scenario, with the way that corn prices are so low, feed yards essentially their cost of gain is lower, so they can afford to spend more on those calves, and they're having to. And so the price slide we really haven't seen take quite as big of an impact or effect right now as we do the value of those additional pounds. You mentioned $3.70, right, for a 5-weight calf, and even higher than that at some of these high volume auction markets and auction systems. And so the price slide is one to consider. The other thing to consider is that if you look on even just like the Nebraska outcomes or price outcomes week over week for different weight classes of calves, whether those be 4 weights, 5 weights, 6 weights, 7 weights, you will see discounts on calves that are marked as fleshy. And so those calves, because they are so fleshy or because they're showing so much extra cover or fat cover on them, the buyers are going to discount them, buying them into the feed yard or in the background or wherever they're going, because those calves have already fleshed up a bit. The opportunity to buy the gain on those calves has reduced. And essentially, we're not offering them the feedstuffs or the nutrients that that calf needs in order to grow more frame as opposed to more flesh. And so Merck Animal Health, in conjunction with Superior Livestock, over the last few years, have done these 5-weight averages of all the calves that were sold in a year's time with or through Superior Livestock Auction. The 2024 data set for that averaged about 572 pounds for those calves that were marketed through 2024, and big populations of calves. We're talking 800,000 plus calves going through that system. On average, calves that were more fleshy in nature got a $14 per head discount compared to the calves that were less fleshy or more lean in appearance. And so there is a discount for highly fleshed calves, which with creep feeding, depending on the feedstuffs that you're choosing, you are at a greater risk to have those fleshier calves, just literally based on the energy content of that creep feed that you're providing to those animals. And I think that's where, when we talk about nutrient density, that's where the critical nutrition of that creep feed comes into play.
I just agree with Jessica. And the other thing is I think you brought up a really good point is that there is a price slide. Heavier calves sell for less per pound than lighter weight calves. And if you think that the added gain that you got for creep feeding is worth market price, it's not. And I think that's the reason why we put together the calculations the way that we did is that we need to show that price slide and basically understand that those additional pounds just aren't marketed at market price.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the nutrient profile that we get the best value from as we think about creep feeding calves. Walk through with us some principles we need to make sure we understand.
Absolutely. So obviously, when you're creep feeding, it's to a younger calf than you would typically be feeding, right? These are not backgrounding calves. These are calves that are still on the mom and about to be weaned. And so the actual size of their rumen or the capacity of their rumen is smaller than what you would expect with a 5-weight, 6-weight, 7-weight backgrounder. And so they're not going to be able to consume a large quantity of feed. So the nutrient density of that feed is key, because every mouthful of feed that they intake has to offer them some additional value in order for that creep feed to be paying off. And so most commercial creep feeds, right, sold through different co-ops, et cetera, are pelleted for palatability and ease of handling. And those creep feeds do have a nutritional profile on them that would be anywhere from 14 to 18% crude protein, in addition to some formulation of energy, which is reported in the form of TVN. That might be anywhere from 40 up to 65% TDN, just literally based on what the energy profile of that is. Some of the best commercial creep feeds that I've seen on the marketplace blend fiber, which is very, very critical for rumen health and rumen development for that calf, in addition to those higher levels of crude protein up to 18, 20%. The most typical crude protein content of these commercial type creep feeds is around 14 to 16%. The really critical thing is that if you want to dig a little bit deeper into the protein importance that those calves actually lightweight, early weaned and 4 to 5 weight calves have a very high requirement for rumen undegradable protein. And I don't want to get too into the weeds on protein here, but essentially crude protein, which is on the label, isn't all created the same, right? We have protein in that crude protein that's ruminally degradable, and then we have some that makes its way to the small intestine for absorption and use, which is called rumen undegradable. Young calves have a very high rumen undegradable protein requirement. A good example of a feed stuff with high rumen undegradable protein content would be distillers grains. And so obviously in the Midwest and Nebraska, we have a great opportunity to capture value out of our distillers grains, specifically for the rumen undegradable protein content for these young calves. And so that is one key that I really like to talk about with cow-calf producers and backgrounders is all crude protein isn't created the same. And getting that additional protein in the form of rumen undegradable into those calves is super key in helping that animal build frame and put on more muscle tissue to help set them up better on later in life. You know, we'll often get into just the typical, you know, I have oats in the bin or I have corn in the bin. How can I offer this as a creep feed for my operation? Yes, there is feeding value in both oats and corn alike, right? You know, corn sitting at about 9% crude protein and, you know, and a decent amount of energy in it. But what is typical is that you don't want to get these calves too fleshy, which you can be at risk with some of those cereal grains that you're going to creep feed on. And so that's always something to be cognizant of is what you're putting in the creep feeder is going to determine what your feed conversion is on those calves coming out. And so feed conversion, right, is how many pounds of gain you get for 1 pound of feed or vice versa, how many pounds of feed it takes to get 1 pound of gain. You're going to have a more profitable, improved feed conversion on those feedstuffs that have higher protein content or are more ideal in terms of what that growing calf needs, as opposed to those creep feeds that are just offering a whole bunch of energy to the calf with very limited protein. So, you know, even though we talk about creep feeds as just a commodity type thing, there is a lot of thought that does go into the nutrient design of these creep feeds when they are marketed from certain commercial groups. And so they are thinking about the protein and the protein requirements that are required for those calves. And so it's always critical that as producers, we ask the questions about what makes up that protein and is it the protein that's going to get me to have the best conversion on my calves with the best frame and the best muscle outcomes for them.
Jessica, we've talked about commercial creep feeds available, but there is the opportunity also for folks to utilize things like dried distillers grains pellets, corn gluten feed, soy hull pellets, things like that as a creep feed. Also, touch on that a little bit and where maybe that might have some application.
Oh, absolutely. So distillers grains in nature are very good energy. Obviously, that energy value has changed a little bit as we de-oil those distillers and whatnot. So I'm not going to comment fully on the energy value of them just because that ranges based on what ethanol plant you're sourcing your distillers from. But in general, those are going to be around 30% protein with actually over half of that protein in the form of rumen undegradable protein. So that protein source that those calves are really needing and can benefit from. You know, then we talk about wet corn gluten feed, sweet bran, whatever it is that you're going to creep feed with from the wet corn side. Obviously a little bit lower in rumen undegradable protein, high energy though, and still decently high or higher than a cereal grain in terms of protein. just crude protein content. And so things to consider with those is that if you're going to use a wet byproduct, you have to worry about how often are you putting it out in your creep feeder, right? Because of spoilage, especially through these summer months. Probably can't leave it out there for more than 3 days, or it needs to be ate up within those 3 days, or you are going to have spoilage. Spoilage can obviously reduce the palatability of that feed, but can create some other challenges for those calves as well. So just things to be cognizant of in that regard. But really, a dry distiller's grains creep feed is, for us in Nebraska, obviously economical in most of our feeding regions. And if you can get your hands on it, probably going to be pretty sufficient in helping your calves gain the type of weight that you're looking for.
So, Aaron, I just make a comment. Is that I agree with Jessica in regards to the pelleted creep feeds. A lot of them out there, a lot of good ones. They flow through a creep feeder extremely well. The other thing is that the pellet, everything in there is all the same size, so the calf can't sort it out. I think as you think about putting together some homemade rations that may include corn and oats, and maybe even a protein pellet in there to get the protein up to where you need to have it. Also, maybe in that pellet, if you're putting together a homemade creep feed, is that you might want to include ionophore in there. But the other piece of that is that when you think about preparing that for the calf, is that you want to make sure that the calf can't sort through that creep feed that's offered free choice in the bunk. So you don't want them to sort. And the other thing is you want it pretty much dust free. And so the idea is that how can you make sure that it's dust free and they can't sort it? You maybe have to add a pellet that maybe has an ionophore in there. And then the other thing is, as you think about how you put that together, you sure enough don't want to grind it very finely. Finely ground corn in that situation is not good because you get more rumen upsets when you think about finely ground corn into those creep feeds. So I think there's sure enough some things to think about as compared to comparing a pellet versus something you put together with some feeds at home. But the idea is, how do you make it, if you put together with feeds at home, how do you make it dust free and calves can't sort through it?
And I think the location matters too, right? And this is one that maybe sometimes people don't think of, but if you want the calves to use the creep feeder, you got to put it in an area where the cows generally congregate and that the calves naturally are, right? Like near water or shade or wherever. But you want those calves to be enticed to go up to the creep feeder. If they're not eating the creep feed, you're not getting the gain out of them.
That's exactly where I was headed, Jessica. I think it was you talk about creep feed logistics and bunk space. Let's talk about that a little bit. What are some key things to remember about that as we think about delivering this, whether it's a commercial type creep feeder or we're thinking about providing some bunk space and maybe we're going to provide some creep access with a fence?
So, I already mentioned obviously putting those creep feeders near natural areas that the cows congregate. So, usually near water is pretty ideal. Bunk space for those calves. General recommendation is providing 4 to 6 inches of bunk space per calf. So, if you had an 8 foot feeder with access on both sides, that would be 16 linear feet of bunk space. And that generally could accommodate 30 to 50 calves. You'll be surprised with just how many calves try to fit themselves into one of the commercial type creep feeders. And so obviously if they're enjoying the product, they're all going to want in and get a piece of it. But biggest thing is making sure that the cow can't get into the creep feeder or, is small enough to pass through the creep gate or whatever type of system you have set up. You just don't want the cow to be eating that pretty expensive feed stuff because she's not going to be able to get the full use out of it that the calves are getting out of it. So really critical to make sure that the cow is kept out and the cow being kept out in addition to different critters. So if you are supplying a creep feed that's, very dry, maybe it's a pelleted form that doesn't have much spoilage potential, and you're only putting your creep feed out there maybe every 4 to 7 days. You want to make sure that the top of whatever the creep feeder is, or what, if it's an ad libitum creep feed or whatever it is, you want to make sure that that feeder has a top on it to, number one, keep the rainfall out of it from spoiling that feed, but number two, keep the critters out, right? Rodents, raccoons, birds, those can all eat a portion of the feed that we want going to the calves.
For cow-calf producers who are retaining calves after weaning, going to put them through a backgrounding phase, is there still benefit for creep feeding for them, or does that change the value a bit?
Aaron, I think it does. If you're going to retain ownership of the calves, we said in the article maybe 100 days or more. The idea is that non-creep fed calves will catch up with creep fed calves at some point in time. And so the idea is that they're going to sell at weaning or shortly after weaning, probably, makes sense to take a look at what creep feeding might provide in regards to the economics. If you retain them for a longer period of time, the added benefits that you have in regards to weight gain at weaning time, again, non-creep fed calves will catch up with creep fed calves. I've recommended creep feeding in the past, even when the economics weren't quite right. That was for folks that were going to retain ownership of those calves after weaning. And so maybe 3 to 4 weeks before you wean the calves, put out a creep feeder. And basically the idea there, Aaron, is to bunk break the calves. And so basically what you would do is at weaning time, just pull the creep feeder off into a lot or a pasture where you're going to keep the calves, and they're already bunk broke, ready to go. And so the idea is that sure enough, creep feeding can work to bunk break calves. But the other idea is that the longer you retain ownership of the calves after weaning, and if you're looking at a full summer of creep feeding, that those non-creep fed calves will begin to catch up with the creep fed calves.
One of the things that comes to mind for me is I think about a cow-calf operation that maybe sells steers at weaning, but also has some heifer calves they retain and develop as replacements. Any cautions that they should be aware of if they're creep feeding the whole herd and then they have some of these heifers that have been creep fed along with the steer calves?
Yeah, that's a good question, Aaron. And I think the idea is that sometimes if you put on flesh, especially on heifers, some of that fat will end up in the udder area. And so if you put flesh on, this is excessive flesh, a lot of that, some of that will end up in the udder area, and that can have a negative impact on future milk production. I see a lot of times the kind of growth that we have in calves, most calves are British Continental crosses. I don't see big problems there. But that is something to think about when you think about creep feeding, especially on the female side of things.
Yeah, I think that just plays in right to the, you don't really want those extra fleshy steers going to market because of reduced price points. But the heifers that you're retaining, this is when you get into those super high energy creep feeds that lack in protein, may not be helping out in the long run, right? Because those heifers may put on all of that additional weight in terms of fat, and they may never get that back off before you're wanting to breed those heifers or to bring them in to sustain through the winter or whatever your plan is prior to when you're going to breed them. So I think it's pretty critical to know what your goals are for your operation, and then also what the genetic potential of your herd is, because it, like Grasby said, often when you have a continental cross into those calves, you don't really see them flesh up quite as much, but those earlier maturing traditional British breeds, some of them do flesh up pretty fast, and it's their nature, right? They are earlier maturing animals, and so you can come at risk of them getting a little too fleshy if you offer those creeps that maybe have a little too much energy in them and not the protein to support that energy.
Dr. Sperber, Dr. Rasby, anything else you'd like to highlight on this topic as we point towards wrapping this up?
I think it's good to obviously check out the Beef Watch article. We do have the example calculation to determine the value of creep feeding in there. We did use an 8-to-1 feed conversion, which was a pretty general feed conversion that you can find in literature. That would be with the creep feed, with the roughage that they're eating out on pasture and the mom's milk. So pretty much a typical 8-to-1 feed conversion with creep feed in the diet. And then obviously you can put all your data in there, figure out what the value of those calves is if you were to add those additional pounds. And then in addition, if you don't know where you're going to be in the market, let's say in October, you're wanting to sell those calves, there's lots of different resources online that you can look up what the futures is for live feeder calves, obviously to determine what the value of those calves is going to be in the future. But there's a good NEB guide on this topic that really fleshes out some more details on creep feeding. And really, Dr. Rasby and I were so excited to talk about this for this year, because this is one of those years where, for the majority of the calculations that both him and I have done on helping operations determine if creep feeding is for them at this point, it has penciled in the majority of the scenarios because of the high price of those calves with the very, very cost-effective, low cost of gain that we can put on that weight onto those calves. Low feed prices, high calves often results in that opportunity for creep feeding.
Yeah, Aaron, one, thanks for having us on. And I think Jessica did a nice job of wrapping up and having producers think about some of the things that we talked about. Again, we have an example calculation there and just walk through that. And I'm sure other extension folks as well as specialists can help them if they have any questions.
Well, for more information on the topic that we did discuss in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find the article at beef.unl.edu. Again, the title of the article, Creep Feeding Beef Calves, Profit or Expense.